Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
The following program is a paid production of Mike Novak, LLC. The opinions, rants, confessions, and lame jokes presented are not necessarily the views of WCPT or its parent corporation, Newsweb Radio.
Geez, it looks like tomorrow I'll be shoveling 10 feet of global warming.
Global warming can cause weather at both extremes, hot and cold.
I see, so you're saying warming makes it colder. Well, aren't you the queen of crazy land? Everything's the opposite of everything. La-di-da-di-da. I'm Lisa Simpson. La-di-da-di-da.
Really? Really? Uh-huh. All right.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. If he's a Renaissance man, I'm a Madonna and child with eggplants. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Swiss chard, Madonna and child with Swiss chard. Let's get that, except you're a radish fan.
Well, in the contest, I'm a fan of the radish. It's red, it's spicy, it's delicious. And I like things that are red and spicy.
I'm leaving that alone.
I know, it only works on TV, too, doesn't it?
It really does.
I'm a redhead.
Welcome. And what we're talking about there, of course, if you haven't done it already, you go to One Seed Chicago and vote for your favorite vegetable. See, we haven't talked about that in a couple of weeks, but it will get hot and heavy again
very soon, because the winner too gets a package of the winning plant seed.
Well, everybody who votes gets a packet of the winning seed, but I if the winning seed is eggplant, I'm sending mine back.
Then give them to me, because I want to give it a crack this year. I want to plant something in the ground from the beginning.
I'll give you the eggplant seed, sure.
Absolutely. I like eggplant. It's good.
No, it's kind of goofy. It's a beautiful plant. Well, I like eggplant.
You planted it in our parking lot farm last season.
I know.
Season,
it was
and I cooked
great.
Two of them. They were great.
Really?
Yeah.
But it ain't Swiss chard.
I can't speak for Swiss chard because I've never had it.
Well, we have to change that.
Okay.
We have to do that.
I won't diss a plant I've never tried.
I would.
Obviously.
I don't have a problem with that.
What's that tree you like to kill? The Norwegian maples or something?
Oh, the...
Hate those, don't you?
The, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Norway maple.
Norway.
Yeah. Norway maple, which is just an awful, 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 awful tree. Give me a piece of wire and I'll girdle it.
Well,
all
the
right?
only funny thing was there was a picture of you girdling that tree.
Yeah.
And I was putting together some sort of promotional item for you. And I was like, oh, here's a great picture. Mike's like saving this tree. You look so serious. And he's down on the ground getting dirty. I'm like, oh, a potential sponsor will love this. And he's like, oh, that's a great picture, except I'm killing it. I'm like, what?
Well, see, you have to understand, when somebody's putting a piece of twine, a wire, around the trunk of a tree...
You're choking that poor
I'm
thing.
I'm choking it.
Yeah.
That's how you girdle
like,
a tree.
I would hear it go...
And some people do it accidentally. That's the problem. Some people, you know, they leave things tied to the tree, and then the tree starts growing, and I have photos of trees that have enveloped things like straps and wires and fences, and
ooh,
they just do.
That's sad. Well, I feel bad for those trees.
Yeah, they often survive, too, which is weird. Trees have a way of just growing around things, and incorporating them into their systems.
Well, again, you talked once about when we had a pretty major storm about how trees were very flexible, you know, in the weather. Like, you'd be surprised how much it can give in certain scenarios. With the blizzard, again, with all that heavy snow and ice hanging on some of those branches, they were hanging so low, but those they didn't snap. Those trees are going to make it.
Yeah.
It's just impressive.
Well, all you got to do is watch a tree blow in the wind to see how flexible they are. There was a storm not too long ago, and Kathleen and I were sitting out back just watching the trees go back and forth and just amazed at how they don't, they bend, but they don't break often. In fact, a tree, you know, depending on the storm, is probably more likely to come out by its roots than it is to snap in half. Now, that's the tornadoes notwithstanding.
Right.
That's a different story altogether. But
I live in Oak Park, and once in my memory, there was a tree that was uprooted and dropped on someone's porch. Like, the root ball was on their front porch.
Well, it's interesting. In the Pacific Northwest, where I had a vacation home for a number of years, the ground is very wet. There's 170 inches of rain a year is kind of normal for them, and so you get the rainforest, this temperate rainforest, where the ground gets saturated with water, and then you get some high winds, and the trees just fall down like matchsticks if you get a high wind, because, as I said, they're not going to break, but the ground is soft, and it just pulls them out.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a lot of these trees upend, and then they leave them, of course, because it's part of nature's way, and you just let the tree lie there, and it becomes a nurse log, and trees grow out of it. It's very interesting stuff.
In theory, could you, if they had, like, tree keepers, could they come and just straighten it up and put it back in the ground?
No.
What,
a 300-foot-tall tree?
Well, I don't know, and I'm not thinking 300 feet. I'm thinking a small tree, like, in that scenario, if the ground was that wet, could you...
people have done that, fixed. And that's an interesting point, though. I hadn't thought about that. I'll have to talk to my...
Yeah, 300-foot notwithstanding. That
no,
was
you're
done
not, you're
time.
Not, no, you're not getting a 300-foot-tall tree, but maybe...
the phone's ringing.
Yep, why don't you get that?
I will.
And by the way, let's get all the... let's get our guests online. Let's get Alex Lykovetsky and Lee Goodman and... we're going to talk to start the show about a victory in Northbrook, which is really, really cool. I will mention, of course, that we are on Facebook and Twitter. I noticed that Zamboni was tweeting this morning about the possibility of making eggplant scones for me. And she said, nah. I won't even go that far in support of Team Eggplant. Good. Thank you. I would give them to Heather. I might try one. We're on Facebook. We tweet. You can go to MikeNovak.net. You can write to me, Mike@MikeNovak.net. Don't forget, we're streaming live on Chicago's Progressive Talk, and you can get that link at MikeNovak.net. That's spelled MikeNovak.net. Don't forget, also, at the end of the show, it's going to be on podcast. We are media a-go-go. All right. And if you hear, and people call sometimes, and Heather was telling me this, and they say, I can hear Heather in the background when she's on the phone. Well, that's because she's sitting next to me. We don't believe in that, all that technology, having, like, glass separating us here in the studio. We sit next to each other, and my choice was to have her down the hall or sit here. I said, no, let's bring her in here. Let's make it sound like there's lots going on, because there always is lots going on. Yes, I can see that. Thank you. And that's the way we roll here at Chicago's Progressive Talk on the Mike Novak Show. Have we also got Lee there on line three? Amtrak Tim, hang on for a sec. I will get to you, but I have to get to the story of the day first. And to do that, I am going first to line two. Alex, are you there?
I'm here. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. That's Alex Lykovetsky, who lives in, I'm pronouncing it kind of okay, right?
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Okay. Lives out in Northbrook. We talked to him the end of last summer. Let's go to line three. Lee Goodman is there, too. Hello, Lee.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Great. It's such a pleasure to have you both on the show today. Lee sent me an email this week, and these two gentlemen were with me Back at the end of August, beginning of September, there was a controversy in Northbrook about the Lykovetsky garden, vegetable garden, because it's in the front yard. And a neighbor complained, and it ended up at the Board of Trustees, and I sat in one of those meetings, and they deferred it. And I guess they finally got back to the subject this past week. Is that right, Lee?
They did, and fortunately they decided people can have vegetables and fruits and flowers in their front yards, in their backyards, in their side yards, wherever they want.
Hey, wait a second. That calls for... All right.
Awesome.
Congratulations, gentlemen. Let's applaud the victory. Wait, where's my victory? I got my victory bell here, too. Excellent. That is just such good news. It is so wonderful, reassuring, I guess, to hear that the Board of Trustees in Northbrook has some empathy and some sympathy for this kind of thing and realizes how important a vegetable garden is. How do you feel about this, Alex?
I feel great because now we can actually do gardening front yard and people appreciate the value, and Northbrook understood the importance of it.
Fabulous. And I talked to your mother the other day. She's calling it her victory garden. I like that idea.
Yes, she does.
And is she excited about this?
Very much so.
I guess you just get ready to start planting in the spring.
Yeah, once the snow melts, we have quite a lot of it in the backyard at the moment. Yeah.
Are you going to start seeds early this year, or are you?
Yeah, most likely, because you get produce much faster, and you get to if you start them in house.
You know what? I will give you and my listeners a heads up here, because a friend of the show, Vicki Nowicki, who was on not too long ago and is occasionally on the program, she has a thing called Liberty Garden. I suppose that's very appropriate given your situation out there in Northbrook. I'm going to it right now. She has started on her blog on libertygardens.com listing the seeds that you can start right now and get them out for planting when the ground is warm enough when we get into March. It's if you go to her blog, libertygardens.com, and then where is the blog? There it is. She says, today is a great day to start cool season vegetables. Some, you know, because you can plant some directly into the ground. Others you probably want to get a little head start on. So I was looking at this the other day, and as soon as it pops up, I'll tell you what she's got in mind for us for what you want to get started on right away. Lee, so tell me about this meeting this past I guess Tuesday it was. How did this all come down?
Well, the way it started essentially was one neighbor didn't like what the other neighbor had planted in her garden. That is, didn't like Dora's vegetable gardens, and complained to the village. And the village responded by telling Dora she had to take out her garden. And we and a bunch of neighbors and other people organized the way we do with various issues and went to the village board. And they went back and forth to committees and staff. And eventually this week they decided that there wasn't any good reason why people shouldn't be able to plant vegetable gardens. And essentially what happened, I think, is everyone realized that there's nothing wrong with letting people do what they want with their own property. So it was a long route, but we got to where I think we should be, and that is a little bit of tolerance for each other and a bit of an affirmation for what people can do when they are willing to stand up to authority and organize and speak out.
And it's remarkable that they're so reasonable. I usually don't expect governments and city governments to be reasonable about this, and yet it seems like it's a very reasonable decision.
Well, we're hoping that it won't just be a Northbrook decision, that people wherever they live, and there's dozens and hundreds of municipalities within your listeners' range, that people will go and plant their gardens and wait and see, and then if they have to, that they will stand up to whatever opposition there is, because ultimately you're right, the people who sit on these different municipal boards are just people, and if you approach them respectfully and give them a good argument and you show them the reasons and you have a sympathetic person like Doris, Dora, you're probably going to win the argument. So we're hoping this goes much beyond Northbrook.
Well, she she's sympathetic and also dramatic in a way, because as you recall, last September at the meeting I showed up to, she brought a basket of tomatoes and simply put the basket up by the board and said, "Here, have some tomatoes." I mean, what an eloquent argument for having a vegetable garden in your front yard.
And she also told the story of how when she was in Russia and sent to Siberia, about how her family survived because they were able to plant their own vegetables. And she went in front of the village board and she said, "Thank you for the chocolate and the butter that the Americans sent to her that helped them after the war." And yeah, she had some wonderful stories, but mostly she's a very genuine person, and she's not unlike, I'm sure, many of the people who listen to your show. She's just an ordinary person who likes to express herself by gardening.
We are talking right now to Alex Lekovetsky and Lee Goodman. Alex is the owner of the garden, Front Yard Garden in Northbrook. The Board of Trustees has decided that that's okay, and that other people can do it. Now, I wonder how many people are going to get on board. Has anybody talked to you about that, Alex?
Well, we met a number of people who do community gardens. We haven't run in an individual yet. I mean, Lee has been trying to do some gardening, too, I believe. But we haven't run into a lot of people yet, but I suspect as people find out, they will probably do that, too.
Lee, are you going to be involved in a community garden this year?
I've been thinking about putting in some potatoes, but I'm not much of a gardener myself. I'm more of an organizer. So
you're a rabble-rouser.
I can relate to that, Lee.
So we'll see what happens.
Oh, man, that's great. I was telling you that I was over at libertygardens.com, and there's a post from February 9th, this past Wednesday, that Vicki Nowicki put up there. And she says she's going to do this on a regular basis so that people in the Chicago area, you know, you can find this on many blogs or websites, but her whole goal is to get people in the Chicago area to know what the time frame is. And she's got a list of some of the veggies there. And she notes whether it's in the mustard family or the lettuce family, the onion family, the bean family, the spinach family. And then she has little codes for transplanting. So if you want to grow it from seed and transplant it, or direct seed into the ground. And according to her list there, now's a good time to start arugula, broccoli, cabbage, lettuce, kale, kohlrabi. Right now, so that they will be ready in time for April 1st, which allows time for them to harden off as well. And, of course, hardening off is the process of taking your seedlings outdoors a little bit at a time so they get used to the cold out there, and then transplant them. And then there are others that can be sown direct. You can do lettuce, direct seed, and peas, radish, spinach, and turnip. And now these are all the what they call cool season vegetables. So, I would tell people, if you want to find this, go to libertygardens.com. The post from February 9th is "Don't lose your cool (parenthesis) vegetables ever again." So, listen, gentlemen, we've got some. Oh, let's see here. We got a tweet coming in. Let's see, Snappy J Dog writes in, and that's Forest Park, I guess.
Yes, Forest Park.
Yeah, we have rules prohibiting some kinds and sizes of gardening in the parkways, which is sometimes the only sunny spot people have. Interesting. I'll tell you what, if folks have information about particular municipalities and restrictions in their particular municipality, give us a call, 773-838-9278. I would love to hear about that. Yeah, you know, this is a victory for Northbrook, Lee, but we need to hope that this spreads.
Well, a lot of these towns that you're talking about may have restrictions and they may not. Northbrook thought it had a restriction, and that's why they told Dora she had to take her garden out, but it turned out they had nothing saying you couldn't. All they had was everyone's expectation that since everyone has a green grass lawn, everyone else has to have one. So what it, you may find in some of these towns, you can go ahead and do this. But the other thing is the restrictions that are in place are largely historical holdovers from an earlier time when people didn't appreciate the value of the environment. So there's a very good chance that even if you've got a restriction in your town, without too much effort, you'll be able to change that.
Well, yeah, you're right. And it seems to me they're holdovers from a time when what was valued more than anything was neatness.
Conformity, exactly.
Yeah, conformity, even better.
Yeah.
Well, conformity... cookie-cutter
suburban landscaping that all kind of looks the same, you know, sprawling lawn, cute little hedges, maybe some flowers around the door. The end.
The ubiquitous U, you know, put a little U in the front of the yard and a lawn, and that's what we call landscaping.
And we found in researching this, anyone can go on the internet, you're going to find people doing all sorts of innovative landscaping all around the country. This is popping up, so it's we hope it's part of a trend.
I hope so too. So here's what you both of you have to do. You have to keep me apprised of what's going on there, Alex. When you start planting, give me a holler. But even more, I want to know if this spreads, if other people are doing it, if there's pushback against it. Who knows? I mean, anything could happen right now, but for today, it's a great victory.
And Mike, we'll be watching your garden to see what happens.
My garden? I don't have enough sun in front to do vegetables. I do a little bit in the back. I live in the city of Chicago, and I don't think they care. I don't think I'm going to get in any... I could put some tomatoes up front. Nobody would care.
Okay.
All right, Lee Goodman and Alex Lykovetsky, thank you, guys, and congratulations on your victory. Hold on. I got to play this just one more time. All right, that's enough of that.
Thanks, Mike.
Gentlemen, we'll talk soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Wow. That's great. That's good to see that happen.
Yeah, I'm excited. That's very cool.
Because I wasn't sure what was going to come down.
Couldn't believe there was this sweet old lady, and she was being persecuted for growing vegetables in the sun.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, just the whole beginning of it, I was like, you're kidding, right? This is actually really? Really?
Really.
That's my yeah.
We'll get to Amtrak Tim in just a second. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Do you know that tree care is a more dangerous job than police work or firefighting? That's what a study by the University of South Dakota shows. And every year, homeowners are injured or killed trying to do their own tree work. You should think twice before performing tree work of any kind, especially if it involves climbing, work from a ladder to prune a tree, and certainly attempting to cut down a tree. The problem is that in this economy, you're going to be tempted to do it yourself to save a couple of bucks, but the Care of Trees is fully insured to cover workers' compensation, property damage, and personal liability in case of accidents. Are you? Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Hey gardeners, want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
It's the middle of the winter and you're desperate for spring. Well, welcome to the club, and don't get all weepy on me, okay? I mean it. Don't make me come over there. What you need is a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. The January-February issue is the annual garden planning edition, complete with three holes punched in the side so you can throw it into your binder and refer to it all year long. Our very own Beth Botts has a story about your edible garden and what you should be doing every month of this year. She goes through the entire year and says, okay, here's what you do in May, here's what you do in June, here's what you do in March, and not necessarily in that order. She wants you to get the most out of your vegetable plants. Now, if you're more interested in blooms, Ball Horticultural Company's Jim Now writes about some of the best varieties of petunias, cannas, zinnias, begonias, and more. And, of course, there's my column on the inside back page. It's not pretty, and it doesn't smell nice. Dear Lord, what are they thinking? You can purchase Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. He's a patient man, but he's always there for us when we need a report on the trains. That is Amtrak, Tim. How are you doing, Tim?
Doing good. Two things I want to talk to you about. Well, the first one does concern Amtrak and the budget slashing that's being proposed right now by the House of Representatives.
Hey, yeah, you know, that's something interesting. There seems to be a disconnect among our legislators and the executive branch, as if, you know, there never was one, or as if it's not always there, is what I meant to say. But because don't I hear Mr. Obama talking about high-speed rail, and then don't I hear the House of Representatives saying, no, we don't really need that?
That's exactly what you hear going on right now. And I really urge all of your listeners have got to call their congresspeople, and they've got to call their two senators to let them know that we want this to happen, because by the U.S. Constitution, the budget has to originate in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. So if the negotiations go badly between the White House and the Congress, we could end up with a very, very, very reduced mass transit train budget. It's very possible that there's this tremendous disconnect, or they're going to end up blackmailing the president and having to do another really bad deal to get, you know, to get the trains. So I really urge everyone to talk to people in Congress. Call your two senators, call your congressperson, let them know what's going on. The second thing I wanted to talk to you about is a very, very quietly WikiLeaks released some information concerning the oil reserves in Saudi Arabia. It didn't make any of the mainstream media, which I thought was pretty amazing. And I've done some work in the Saudi oil fields, Mike.
Yeah.
And I was doing some work about 3 years ago at a place called Korea. In Korea, I sent you an email about this a couple months ago, but you never emailed me back. I had some photos and everything on it.
I missed that somehow. I'm sorry. Would you send that off again?
I will. But the idea, in Saudi Arabia, they do what's called secondary production, which means that they take seawater, they purify it, and they inject it into the ground to pressurize the well to produce the oil.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing this since, like, the 60s. And what the WikiLeaks that came out basically said that the oil ministry of Saudi Arabia, Saudi Aramco, has basically been lying about their reserves. And they've about 40% overestimated their available reserves to the world to kind of keep the price of oil sort of moderated.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're saying is in 2012, that they're probably going to reach their ability. They're going to reach their ability. Their peak production capability is going to come. They're not going to be able to not produce oil. Of course, Saudi's got tons of oil, but their ability to stabilize price based on being able to just kick up production is going to be over next year. Now, I'll tell you, how does it relate to me? When I was working in the Saudi oil fields at a place called Korea, where they purify seawater and they, well, not purify, they filter it and they do some things to it to get it ready to inject it into the, send it out to the oil fields to inject it. When I was there, they bought some equipment from our company. They had doubled the size of that water treatment plant, doubled it. This was about 3 years ago, because I was talking to one of the, lab managers there at the facility, who also happened to be a Yuristula graduate, who was a Saudi. It was pretty funny. We had the same chemistry professors. Basically, what's happened is in the first part of the process was one barrel of seawater for one barrel of oil. Right now, or it was a couple years ago, it was two barrels of seawater for one barrel of oil. They had doubled the size of Korea. It's about a two-hour drive south of Dammam. They were predicting in 3 or 4 years, which is now, it was to take 3 to 4 barrels of seawater to produce one barrel of oil. What's happening in the Saudi oil fields?
Hmm. Now, and explain one more time how the seawater produces the oil.
Well, it's called secondary production. What happens is that you basically, under Saudi Arabia, it's a great big oil and vinegar salad.
And it's, okay.
I mean, it's gigantic. These pipes are about as big as your house.
Uh-huh.
And there's dozens of them coming from this plant. They produce billions of barrels. They produce millions of barrels of water a day to inject. So they inject it into they have injection wells, and then around them they have what are called production wells. So they inject the water deep into the oil aquifer,
mm-hmm.
lack of a better word.
Yeah.
And that pressurizes it, which is one thing. But the other thing it does is it floats the oil to the top, right? Just like an oil water, salad. So it floats it over to the top, which makes it easier to produce. So you pressurize the cavity, the reservoir, and then you push the oil toward the top. Now the problem is, as you keep pumping water into these aquifers, eventually you start to get a lot of water coming up with your production.
Yeah.
Because you just keep pumping water. There's a finite amount
of oil.
And
so it just gets harder and harder to extract the oil as the reservoir is depleted, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And then eventually, the next couple of years, you're going to have what's called tertiary production. In tertiary production, you actually have to force the oil out, which would be, you go down downstate Illinois, you see those mules, they call those things that are going back and forth that are pumping out the oil.
Yeah.
That's called tertiary production. You actually have to force the oil out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Saudi's production cost right now is about $12 to $15 a barrel. When they finally, and that's why oil is so cheap, when they finally have to go from secondary production to tertiary production, that they're not well, first they'll be able to produce less, or they won't be able to just produce lots and drop the price. But more importantly, the cost of production will go up to like the $20-$25 barrel range.
Mm-hmm.
So there'll be no cheap oil in the market to stabilize price anymore.
Got it. And this is just coming out in WikiLeaks?
WikiLeaks released it. An oil minister had a meeting, a Saudi oil minister had a meeting with the embassy and was basically explaining that they've been lying. They've been lying to keep the market from being spooked.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, our response to it is to say we really don't need high-speed rail in mass transportation in the United States.
What really changed my opinion about Amtrak and about conservation and the kind of car I drive was that meeting with that guy. His name was Faisal. I can't remember his last name. But he was a university graduate just like I am.
Mm-hmm.
We both had the same chemistry professors. And he was just explaining to me the nuts and bolts of what's going on and what's happening. And that day I became a conservationist.
Interesting. Well, Tim, this is very interesting stuff, and I'll keep an eye on that, and I want you to do that for me as well. And, I don't have...
I'll send you the pictures of Korea.
Yeah, please do. And I'm sorry I missed it. I don't know what happened with the email, but... with the budget process, this is going to be very interesting, and I don't think very heartening to watch. I think it's going to be pretty ugly. This process in the next few months, it's going to be pretty ugly.
The important thing is that our Congress people have got to hear from us, because if not, I can guarantee you they're hearing from the corporations.
Oh, yeah.
They need to hear from the people.
Yeah, that's and I can't emphasize. strongly enough that people need to write. They need to write to their legislators, their congressmen and their senators, and to the president, and make yourself heard. This is the only way that democracy can work.
The petroleum reality is closer than people realize, and it is going to hit us like a freight train.
Okay, on that happy note, always a pleasure talking to you, Tim.
No problem. Talk to you later, Mike.
You have a good one. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's bring in another voice, happy voice, and that's Rick DeMaio, our meteorologist. How you doing, happy voice?
Is that because Wisconsin beat Ohio State yesterday?
How about that? You guys have their number.
Yeah, you know what? I think they know it, too. I really do. I think they look at the schedule and they go, gosh darn it, we got to go to freaking Madison to play the Badgers.
I don't know what it is, but you keep doing it. It's, you know, anybody beats Ohio State is okay in my book.
I know. I think that's one of the reasons why you like having me on the show, because I love to talk about it.
That's right, and now I got to be careful when I say things like that, because Ron Cowgill from Mighty House might slip more Ohio State fight music into my...
Oh. Revenge is a dish best served cold.
I know.
He'll never see it coming.
Well, we're still waiting on that. You know, he punked me at the end of the football season last year. I played a commercial and the Ohio State fight song came up. And
instead of the commercial. It was so, I laughed so hard I thought I was going to explode.
Well, I don't know what the people in Columbus are doing today, but they're certainly not going. Dan, 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 dan.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
But you are, of course. Hey, listen, I walked out the door this morning and it felt like I was in Florida or something. It just
yesterday too.
Oh yeah, you know it was amazing because I mean all week long people kept saying, "Rick, we're going to break freezing." Rick, I'm like, I don't know. We got an awful lot of snow out there, but I think the one reason why we were able to make it up to 37 degrees was the fact that we had a lot of wind, and the wind was pretty much of a dry wind. It wasn't like the kind of wind that kind of grabs onto a lot of the melting snow and produces those low clouds and fog and drizzle. So it was almost like one of these types of winds that places in, like, say, Eastern Colorado, Eastern Wyoming, and Western Kansas get when it blows off the mountain. So you get almost like what's called a Chinook wind type effect, where it's a dry flow, and instead of melting the snow and get a lot of moisture and fog and haze in the atmosphere, you just get a little bit of cloudiness and a little bit of sun, and I think we're in that same kind of pattern today. And enjoy every bit of it, because this is the warmest we've been around here since I believe it was January 1st, we had 41 degrees. We made it to 37 yesterday. We'll probably make it, I'm thinking, Mike, probably low 40s today. Unfortunately, the wind turns around a little bit more northwesterly during the day on Monday.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe that's not such a bad idea, because I have somebody who just tweeted me.
Right.
And
I know
exactly
what you're going to say, too.
DeMaio needs to get on and convince me that the upcoming heat wave is not the beginning of spring.
It's not the beginning of spring.
Okay, good. Because, you know, if it melts too fast, first of all, you get flooding.
Oh, right, yeah.
I don't want all this to go away and then have us freeze again, because you get that freeze and thaw cycle,
right,
which is not good for plants.
Right.
Right now, you know, they're all tucked in their beds under the snow.
Oh,
they're nice and comfy.
Yeah, and you know, what you also don't want are, you know, the obligatory pothole season coming back to...
Oh,
it's already brutal.
Oh, yeah.
It's already brutal. I mean, it's nasty out there.
They're filled with ice now.
Right. Yeah, you get, like, these potholes filled with ice, kind of a nice mix. But, you know, what I am seeing now is the evidence of lazy dog walkers, Mike. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That's why I just let my dog out on the balcony. No one has to see it.
Yeah. But yeah, they just let the snow collect over it, and as the snow melts, it just gets more uncovered. It's quite atrocious.
And I know there was a story in New York City about that as well, where people, like, you know, and obviously that's not so much of a sanitary issue. It's more of a rat problem, I guess, in New York, because the rats kind of like that kind of stuff.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, we got all kinds of pleasant conversation.
Yeah, we do.
You know?
Amtrak,
even though we haven't mentioned the word, right?
What was that, Rick?
I guess everybody in Radioland knows what we're talking about, even though we haven't mentioned the word. Right?
Exactly.
That's the beauty of it. You just have to be descriptive and paint the picture with your words without actually saying it.
Yeah, you got it right, Heather. but Mike, you know, you mentioned a couple of things there, and one thing I really want to bring up is the fact that the snow that we're talking about, obviously, a result of 20 inches, or was it 20 inches? You heard about the...
Yeah, what's this revision going on here? Why can't we have our third largest snowstorm of the, of the
Isn't that
millennium?
Funny how people ought to go, no, I want it to remain the third worst ever, and don't you change it.
Exactly. That's what I want. I want to say I lived through it.
It validates all the torment.
And it right, it, yeah. You have to have that validation.
Yeah.
Here's But here's the problem, Rick. Here's the problem.
What?
We live in Chicago, and right. We want to be able to pride ourselves on how tough we are, and we get
right.
through the winter. Oklahoma's had it worse than we have. They got down to 31 below, which we've never had in Chicago, and they got more snow out of this the last couple of systems than we got.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because Oklahoma City, I think, got down to -5, and Ponca City got down to -25, and it was one small station, not too far away that got to -31. I'm looking at this place, and Ponca City, which is basically extreme northern Oklahoma, basically bordering on Kansas, is a very, very small airport in a valley. They had about 15 to 16 inches of snow. They basically went clear and calm. So it's almost like having, you know, our records be like the Aurora Sugar Grove Airport, which is just the perennial cold spot for,
yeah.
you know, northeast Illinois.
Well, so, you know, I don't think it's accurate, really, to have our forecast or our readings come from O'Hare. Really, Midway makes more sense because that really is the city.
Yeah, and I think that's what... I know Skilling has been arguing about that for years, but when they decided to go to the, you know, the official measurement at O'Hare, and I tell people when you're driving on Irving Park Road from one side of O'Hare to the other, principally over to, like, say, you know, Route 83 in Bensonville, the place where they measure the snow is the U.S. Postal Office. It's right outside there. Now, oddly enough, the exact measuring area where they have the wind instrumentation and the rain gauge and the temperature, believe it or not, is at a point on O'Hare Field where it's actually located in DuPage County.
No,
because,
really?
Yeah, because part of DuPage County actually goes into O'Hare Airport. Now you also have observations at, you know, for the tower. You have observations at either end of the runway. So there's observation sites all over the place. But getting back to the point of interest here is, what the Weather Service was kind of doing was simply going along the lines of what is an event and then what is a calendar event. And they basically tried to take the snowfall that was occurring early Tuesday morning, which was a little bit of lake-enhanced, lake-effect snow, and Milwaukee was kind of onto this first because they had about 3 to 5 inches of snow up around Kenosha, Racine. And they said, hey, guys, you know, we're going to include this in the event. And someone said, yeah, but that wasn't part of the blizzard. And then someone said, well, but the blizzard actually enhanced the cold air coming in off Lake Michigan. So doesn't the blizzard technically have, you know, another part to it? And, you know, then someone said, well, the blizzard actually ended at about 4 a.m, but then we had this lake enhanced snow on the backside on Wednesday morning, which added, you know, 3 or 4 inches. And someone said, well, without the lake, we wouldn't have had that. We would have had just this. And then someone said, well, yeah, on the East Coast, you have all this tremendous snowfall because you're near the water. So we went back and forth and back and forth. And I brought this up to my class at Oakton on Friday because we had, you know, a discussion 2 weeks before about the difference between weather and climate, and you get into these climate discussions and climate arguments and what exactly is climate and who defines climate. And this was a really good example of how even in this day and age you have people getting into these arguments, well, not arguments, but basically scientific discussions about what is an event and what is a calendar event. And it kind of came all down to, you know what, let's just keep apples and apples and oranges and oranges. And in the end, the funny thing about it was the Weather Service first actually came out and dropped the amount by 0.2 inches, which was a bunch of you know what. And we're all looking at this going, you've got to be kidding. You spent all afternoon going, 0.2 less. And in the end, once they had this conference call, unfortunately I wasn't able to be a part of it, but I did send them some of my my thoughts on it. They actually raised the amount.
Really?
20.2 to 21.2.
Wait. But so how did the storm get downgraded if they raised the amount of snow?
Well, because apparently they went and looked back at the observations and said we actually added too much snow here. And then
you know,
I
had no idea, Rick. This is amazing. So the meteorologists get together in a room, and then they have a conference call, and they decide whether this is the storm of the century or just the storm of the week.
Well, first off, it was the National Weather Service by themselves. Okay, they said we're going to downgrade this from 20.2 to 20.0, which was nuts to drop it to. Then they were going to them. The second part was to take away the little bit of snow that we had early Tuesday morning. That would have dropped it below the 1979 storm.
Yeah.
So it would have made it number 4. And they said, okay, we're going to have a conference call. Everybody's going to come on and give their, you know, P's and Q's, so to say. And then we'll discuss it at that point. Well, there was such a heated debate that ensued that, and it wasn't so much, you know, non-professional, but there were a few of the people who said, look, how do you think we then have to go back on the air and explain all this? This is crazy. I mean, what's the point of it? So what ended up happening was the same rule that they applied to this storm, which was to basically include the morning event, they then went back and looked at the 1979 storm and said, you know what, if we're going to do it for the 2011 one, we got to do this for the 1979 storm. So it turns out that the 1979 storm, which was 18.8 inches, then included an additional 1.5 inches that fell on the evening of January 12th, which was the beginning of the storm. So now that storm has been raised to 20.3. Talk about putting more salt on Michael Blandick's wound, right?
Wow. So this is what we call revisionist history, pal.
It is pretty funny, isn't it?
Yeah, it's odd, you know, and when you get a weather forecast, you don't realize that the meteorologists are in the background duking it out, you know, and trying.
Oh, yeah, well, trust me, I remember many, many times when I was working for United Airlines, and this is why I think most meteorologists need to work in, quote, an operational environment where your forecast are really held up to a much higher standard. That's not the case in TV and radio. That's not the takeaway from the type of information that people on TV and radio give, because it's obviously very important. But in an operational setting, I'll never forget the first time when I was forecasting for O'Hare, and I said, oh, we can easily get 8 to 9 inches of snow out of this. And the guy working next to me, who is, you know, basically much more experienced, he goes, you go out on the floor in the dispatch office, and you say we're going to get 8 to 9 inches between 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, you're going to send those people out to the crazy farm. You can't do that. You got to work into this slowly. And I was young and aggressive, and I wanted to, you know, say what I thought would happen.
Yeah.
The guy actually convinced me to work into the storm at a much slower rate and go for 6. He goes, go lower end and see how things work out in the high end, and see what happened. You know, we ended up getting them for that storm.
What?
8.9 inches. I was right, but the difference was no difference from an operational standpoint for 6 inches and 9 inches. However, the 9 inches would have probably made them cancel more and go probably a little bit crazy too soon. So that's why I think operational meteorology is so important, because it keeps you a little bit closer to science as opposed to, you know, going crazy with saying 6 to 9 inches. Some places could get 12. Locally, 15. You know,
you guys have. I didn't realize meteorologists have so much power in the world.
Yeah, and I think that's what the Weather Service was trying to do. They were trying to make sure that everything that was done in the scientific way was done the right way. So in the end, so just to kind of put this all to bed here, the 2011 blizzard will now go down, still as the third worst, but it goes down at 21.2. And the funny thing about it was the 1999 storm was 21.6. And I am sure I am so sure that they went through every observation and said, please don't become 21.7. Please don't become 21.7. So this, and then it would have been bumped up to number 2. And then the blizzard now of 79 is now 20.3. So
oh, now we can all sleep easier.
It's, yeah, just, you know? in the sense the rankings don't change, the numbers do a little bit.
And if you live through it, you really don't care.
I was born during the blizzard of 78 and 79, and I've been getting crap for that basically my whole life. Like, it was my fault that the snow came, so if it ends up being bumped down lower, I actually, that saves me some grief.
Well, yeah, you know, Heather, there were, I think, 6 different births that actually occurred in the back of cars or buses because they couldn't get to the hospitals in that event.
And she was one of them. All right, we need a forecast here, Rick.
Yeah, probably and please say that, Mike, a lot of snow melt. You know, Skilling did this really good thing where he looked back at how much snow actually melts after a major storm like this, and one of my observers, Patrick Skatch, did a similar study. Unless you really get a lot of high moisture content in the air, the snow melts more so at a much slower rate. It basically sublimates in the atmosphere. In other words, it dries out before it melts.
Okay.
So I'm thinking probably near 40 today, probably only upper 20s, maybe lower 30s tomorrow. We actually cool down a little bit, and then back to like the low to mid 30s on Tuesday. But it's a very, very slow melting process, which is terrific because the last thing you want is a major flood event with rain.
Yeah.
So a little bit of melting today, a little bit of melting tomorrow, much more significant melting, though, Wednesday and Thursday, when temperatures, quite frankly, could get into the upper 40s. And this is amazing, Mike. We may actually hit 50 degrees here Thursday and Friday.
And we can do that with this snow on the ground? That can be done, huh?
Yeah. The pattern, if we didn't have the snow on the ground, we'd probably be close to the lower 60s just south of us by Friday. But that's obviously not going to happen. So when we talk to you next week, our snowpack, which is currently at about 10 or 12 inches, will quite frankly probably be down about 1 or 2 inches. The only thing you're going to see a lot of still are these huge piles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the city will have to do some work on trying to break some of these piles up because that's the stuff that you'll see around for quite some time.
Well, but the problem in the city and probably elsewhere is that, I know there's a side street near me that there are piles on each side as you pull out into the major thoroughfare, and it's a hazard. And
on the corners, you can't see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's still an issue. But put it this way, a lot of slush underfoot over the next 7 days, but nothing in the way of any cold or snow coming back until we talk to you next Sunday.
Okay. And
people should not jump the gun and plant tomatoes, even though it's warm.
You know this. You know when you're giving out your tomato warning on February 13th.
Don't do it.
It's early. Yeah,
it's a little early.
Rick DeMaio Weather, you can go to DeMaioWeather.com and listen every Sunday. And he is the guy who told the city that the Lakeshore Drive was going to shut down and they wouldn't listen. We got to talk about that. That's a promo right there for me, you know, for my radio show, but that's why we have him on the program, because he is Mr. Accurate. We will talk to you next week, Rick.
Mike, Heather, have a good week.
You
right,
too.
Take care. Guys, Valentine's Day is tomorrow, and your friends at Sid's Floral Shops want you to know that there's still time to order flowers for your Valentine. Visit SidsOnline.com or call them at 800-974-SIDS. SIDS or 7437. 1-800-974-7437. You can do it right now. And believe me, I talked to them about it. Sid's is closed on Sundays, but guess what? For Valentine's Day, you can call right now and you can select something really special for your Valentine, like their Super 4, Sid's most popular Valentine's gift, featuring 1 dozen premium roses arranged in a glass vase, a plush teddy bear, which I hope is not pink, Valentine's Mylar balloon, and a large 14-ounce box of Fannie Mae chocolates. For something more unique, check out their Magic Box or Ruby Surprise arrangements or any of the dozens of fresh floral Valentine's gifts. Your Valentine's gift from SIDS will be hand-delivered throughout Chicagoland, or let them help you send a long-distance floral gift throughout the U.S. and Canada, plus most international destinations through their network of member florists. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. And here's a save-the-date reminder. SIDS Annual Garden Expo is coming to their Palos Hills store on Friday and Saturday, March 4th and 5th. Visit SIDSOnline.com for all of the details.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
All right, we're coming up on news at the top of the hour. In the second half of the show, we'll be talking to Jerome Johnson and Catherine McGlynn about Garfield Farms' 25th annual Native Plant Seminar. But what I think is you know, talking native plants is interesting, but one of the things we're going to talk about is invasives and how you can spot them and what's being done to control them. What plants are going to take over your garage next week? And things are changing. And we recognize things that weren't invasive before, or we didn't think they were, and that changes. And so that ought to be an interesting conversation. And what you got here, Heather? We got a thing.
We got
from
an email from a listener.
Tom Shepard, right?
Yes, regarding the coal gasification that we were talking about before,
right?
And the clean air ordinance. And there is a below from the Sierra Club in the email he sent is an account on how our town hall meeting went. We are still asking folks to ask Governor Quinn to veto Senate Bill 3388, which passed in the waning hours of the lame duck legislative session. So
it got through. Right, and the bill requires, and that's the important thing, it requires gas companies to buy their production from Leucadia at a higher rate, and of course that's going to be passed on to consumers, and the process furthers dependence on fossil fuel. So
and produces more carbon.
Yeah, and I was saying in talking to Amtrak Tim, here's a chance for you to do something. Here's a chance for you to make a difference. Write to the governor and say, do not pass this bill. Veto Senate Bill 3388. And I hope that you will do that, because it's not good for us. It's taken us down the wrong path here. We don't need more expensive gas.
And all the information
created from coal.
All the information's on the Sierra Club website, including the post about the town hall and who to contact regarding
the
bill.
All right, we got news coming up. We'll talk to you.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Should we just sit here and play 3 minutes of
I'd be okay with that. That's a
Midnight
good song.
Oil. Great song. Welcome back to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show. That is producer Heather Fry with me, and we were talking off air how old school we are here. We just play the music from CDs, and we mix the voice and the track on the fly here.
Most no pre-production.
And sometimes we crash and burn.
Oh, yes.
It happens. Well, we do a little bit of production work. We get some of that done. It's live. It's real. Yep. And by the way, we are, as Dick Kay says, we are live. We are local. I know some folks think that, of course, we're coming out of a basement in Washington, D.C.
Nope.
or something.
Nope.
No, this is the basement in Chicago.
It's a basement on the ground, really.
It feels
it's
like
a one-level cinder block beauty.
Yeah,
on the south side of Chicago.
It's because the window's like 8 feet off the ground, so you feel like...
I'm attracted to radio stations like this, though. I don't like the real big, fancy, schmancy ones.
Oh, I got to tell you, though.
Those are nice. Don't get me wrong.
I've worked at Gargantua Radio down the dial, and there's something really fun about sitting on Michigan Avenue in the big showcase and having people walk by and flash you and things like that. And
you were flashed?
Oh, yeah.
By a man or a woman?
Oh, by a woman.
Lucky you.
Yeah, it was fun.
Because, my only close experience is something like that. I was clutching a broom, and I was ready to really whack the guy.
Yeah, but you know what happens is in the very... I only got flashed once in 10 years, and I'm thinking, come on, this has got to be a better percentage than that.
She loved roses. She just loved roses.
But what usually happens in a place like that, it's the teenage boys and the 20-somethings, and they throw themselves against the window, and they point to the microphone, because there's a microphone on the outside on Michigan Avenue, and they're saying, and you can see what they're mouthing, put me on the air,
put me on the air.
And it's like, you're the last guy I'm going to put on the air.
It's like,
you know,
it's like when a bird flies into a closed window. It's like, and gets up and tries it again. Like, yeah, no, but.
Yeah, that's what the
bear a very little brain.
These guys do. They come to, you know, yeah, right, pal. Yeah, you're the guy I want to put on my radio show. Yeah, that's it. In the second hour, we are, we might even give you a tip on keeping your flowers fresh.
That's what I was just going to tweet, because I'm trying to find something online for best ways to keep your flowers fresh, and let's ask our social media friends.
Why don't we do that?
You get flowers for Valentine's Day. What's the best way to keep them fresh and beautiful and lasting long?
And we'll give you ours, and you give us yours, and we'll
naturally, without chemicals, if possible.
Yeah, that would be nice. The problem, though, and this is a reason to go to places like Organic Bouquet. I mean, I had Amy Stewart on the program a year and a half ago before she wrote Wicked Plants, which I know...
I bought that.
I know you do.
I bought myself
Do you know
a
she's
copy.
Got a new one out?
I saw it.
Wicked Bugs.
Yeah, and my birthday was last week, so that was my Christmas present to myself, so now I might go get her other book. It's going to be the beginning of my bathroom library in my new home.
But
I want cool books in the bathroom.
But she wrote a book called Flower Confidential a few years back, and I interviewed her about that. And, you know, there's a lot of chemicals that go into keeping flowers perky.
Well, there's a drawback to grocery store flowers because of where they're kept?
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the things she pointed out in her book. And you might want to be aware of this when you buy flowers at a grocery store. Where do they put them generally? In the produce section, all right?
Yep, with all the
Ever
fruits
heard of
and veggies.
Ethylene gas from apples and other fruits? Ethylene gas is what, it's a decaying agent. It makes the plants bloom faster and decay faster. So the last place you really want to put flowers is in the produce section. But that's where people are used to it. If you buy your flower there, chances are it's been hit with some ethylene gas, and it might not last as long as it would if you got it from a florist, because florists aren't selling apples as well. So that's the tip of the week. On flowers and doing that. Why don't we get Jerome and Catherine, or Kathy, I guess, on the line, and we will do that. I wanted to give a shout-out right now. Let me get to my website here. A couple of things going on this week that you need to know about. And one of them, well, it actually is in a couple of weeks, and I put this on my website because I was talking to my good friend Kathy, Nancy Gonciorek, rather. Nancy Gonciorek, who is with, all right, come on, let's load up here. You know, everything is slow when you want it to be fast, and you just, Nancy Gonciorek is with the WPPC, which is the Wildflower Preservation and Propagation Committee up in McHenry County, and I keep saying, you guys need a little slightly catchier name, you know, you really do. But they're great people, and they hold a great seminar every year. And on February 26th, which is a Saturday, at McHenry County College Conference Center, which is at 8900 U.S. Route 14 in Crystal Lake, they are having a seminar called Tending the Earth. And now next week, I am going to have a couple of people from that seminar on my show. And I'm hoping to get a couple, maybe Steve Applebaum, who's the chairman and principal ecologist of Applied Ecological Sciences. We're working on that. But and Carol Brown is another speaker, and she's going to be on the show next week. But the reason I'm mentioning this now is because I was talking to Nancy Gonciorek, and she said, hey, we tried to send out these flyers, and something's going wrong with the post office, and they had a snafu with snail mail. So I said, you know what? I'm going to give a shout-out to the WPPC and the conference on the 26th. And if you're out that way, they do a bang-up job. They have great speakers. They serve you lunch. It doesn't cost an arm and a leg. And I hope that you will be able to take advantage of it. And I just wanted to make sure that you knew about it. It's called Tending the Earth. That is the name of the seminar. And it's only $30, $35 at the door. Like I said, it doesn't cost you an arm and a leg. And I hope that you'll take advantage of it. They'll have Rebecca Tonietto is going to start off. Talking about providing habitat for native bees. Steve Applebaum, again, is with Applied Ecological Services. He'll be speaking. Carol Brown, as I mentioned, is a conservation biologist, and she'll talk about native plants. There will be a discussion panel and lunch, and you'll have a great time. So there you go. And if you got, and if you, you know, kind of caught this and can't write it down, go to my website, mikenovak.net, go to this week's show, and all that information is up there. Now, there is another conference going on, and that's not in 2 weeks, but it's next week, and that's why we have Jerome Johnson on the phone. How you doing, Jerome?
Just fine, thanks, Mac.
Great to have you, and Kathy McLean. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Mike.
They are here to talk about Garfield Farm, and now don't be confused, this is not Garfield Park Conservatory. No, we're going out a little farther west, Garfield Farm Museum. Exactly where are you located, Jerome?
We're just west of Geneva and St. Charles off of Roosevelt Road, Illinois Route 38 on Garfield Road. So we're just technically 40 miles in a straight line from State Street.
Hey, there you go. And sometimes it's actually faster to go out that way.
Just about.
And you're having your 25th annual Prairie Woodlands and Wetlands Management Seminar. You have to have been around a while to have your 25th annual.
Yes, we've been, number one, fortunate to have been around. But the main thing is we feel it's very important to keep this as an annual educational event, because there's always people that are wanting to learn more about this and keeping it visible, and we can sort of see the cycles of interest level in working with native plants, whether it's in your own backyard or garden, or if you've got some property and you want to manage something, or if you're volunteering with a forest preserve or other natural area agency and want to get more involved in how to work with native plants.
Well, this is not anything new, and the idea of working with native plants has become, I don't want to say fashionable, important, I would say, is a better word. We're learning more and more the benefits of putting natives in. Is that wave still cresting? Is the bell curve still going up in that regard? Where are we with the interest in native plants, Jerome?
Well, I think it's sort of a cyclic kind of thing. So it remains relatively constant, and there's just some years where you might have greater participation, other years maybe not quite as much, but it's a nice sustained level, and that's really what the whole thing is about, is not just native plants for the sake of native plants, but trying to look at things that are sustainable for our country and area.
Well, you've got some of the best people around to talk about that at your seminar next week, including people who've been on my show, my buddy Roy Diblick from Northwind Perennial Farm, and of course the very outspoken Connor Shaw from Possibility Place Nursery. You've also got John Engstrom, and of course Kathy You will be speaking. And Kathy, I want to get into the idea of invasives, because that's kind of where you're coming from. That's what you're headlining. But one of the things, Jerome, I want to talk to you about very briefly is the idea of natives. Roy Diblick from Northwind Perennial Farm is a guy who believes in communities of plants. And he works with many natives, but he doesn't necessarily work completely with natives. It seems to me that's a pretty good approach for the beginning gardener to introduce them to how natives work in our landscape.
Oh, yes. And the critical thing, too, is that, you know, people have a broad range of interests, and this is a way for, based on what one's situation is, to incorporate things into one's own existing gardening. It's not necessarily for people who want to just totally restore things exactly to what they might have been like. There's that possibility, but that's a very hard and achievable thing.
Well, you know, I tend to say this sometimes at garden talks, that in a sense there's no such thing as a natural garden, especially if you've got power wires overhead and an asphalt driveway and a cyclone fence. It's kind of hard to recreate what might have been there 150 years ago.
Oh, yes. But with this kind of thing, it gives people an opportunity to get their feet wet, to feel comfortable with it, and that's one thing why I have Roy involved, besides from his many years of experience. I've known him since the 70s when he first got involved in this. And the critical thing is to realize there are ways to work with natives and ornamentals and such if that's what people would like to have.
Yeah, because if you've ever been up to Northwind Perennial Farm, and you should go up in Burlington, Wisconsin, he shows you how he works, puts those communities together, and you know he's worked. He grew, depending on what you read, somewhere between 15,000 and 22,000 plants that ended up in the Lurie Garden in Millennium Park.
Yes.
It's just amazing. And I mean, how do you grow that many plants and then ship them off to Chicago?
Well, he sort of started out that way. He's grown hundreds of thousands of plants through the years.
And, of course, then there's Connor. And I love Connor because, and he was on the show just a few weeks ago, and we were talking about the state of the industry and how difficult it is for garden centers these days to stay afloat. That also affects what people plant, I would think. I don't know if you notice that from where you are, because you work at that museum, but I'm sure you're aware that the industry is hurting right now.
Well, I mean, obviously, the excessive fueling of overdevelopment that occurred in the last decade certainly offered market opportunities for anybody. We saw incredible amounts of nurseries popping up everywhere, so that certainly, you know, impacted when that development then has gone back to a slower pace and impacts, you know, this number of nurseries and garden centers around a region. So that's, you know, the ebb and flow of economics there. But the thing is, the critical thing is to recognize those entities or individuals who really have a specialized and almost an advocacy kind of interest in working with native plants, and certainly Connor Shaw is one. He has been from the forefront working with native trees and shrubs, collecting seed, propagating them himself, coming up with very effective ways to produce a plant that's going to survive, even if you plant it in the middle of August, a lot of 80% root ball kind of containers that he creates. So very much interest and concern, not just about the business, but about the environment is where Connor, where Roy, all the people that we've had at Garfield Farms Prairie Seminars through the years are coming from.
So what's the focus of this going to be? Is it geared towards the average person and getting something going? I mean, what's the level that you hope to hit?
We all share what we learned ourselves over the past 30-some years. And so we know what it's like to go into a vacuum not knowing and having to discover on our own. So there's no reason for people to reinvent the wheel. They can come, and in a day's time at the seminar, we're very intensive. We don't mess around with trying to convert people. We want to give you the information, the facts, and how to do things, and what might work for your particular situation. So that's where it's an intensive all-day seminar from 8:30 to 4:30, and we go the gamut of, besides from the types of plants and all, to actual management methods, be that from controlled burns in larger situations, to mechanical removal to chemical methods that sometimes are necessary to use.
We could that could open a discussion right there.
Mm-hmm.
There's the whole idea of how do you control invasives, and you know, I spoke to a guy who's a restoration ecologist about this, and you know, I'm on my program, I try to steer people away from chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because I'm of the mind, you know, it would be wonderful if everybody followed read and followed label directions, but I fear many people do not. And then all kinds of accidents happen, like when you have drift of chemicals, and you're not really paying attention to what you're doing. And yet, I talked to, as I said, a restoration ecologist who said, you know, if I didn't have Roundup or glyphosate available to me, I couldn't do my work. And
yes, these are all different tools that are in the toolbox. They have to be used judiciously and with certainly the appropriate amount of knowledge and training. But generally speaking, most of the things that is being used in restoration ecology tends to be less of an impact than other types of chemicals. So it's not, you know, the upper end of things. It's not that they aren't sometimes used. There are some difficult situations. But it is the kind of thing that, and the judicious use and not overuse, because the average gardener or the average, you know, owner of a lawn kind of thing, they're using many more chemicals and fertilizers than the typical farmer does. So you almost see worst impact coming off of lawns into creeks than you do off of farm fields.
Well, they're the worst, lawns, I would say, you know, because they use what Canada has now described as cosmetic pesticides. And a cosmetic pesticide basically is when you have a dandelion and you're too lazy to pull it out yourself and you're throwing, you know, 2,4-D at it or whatever to kill it. That's a cosmetic pesticide, and there are better ways, better avenues than using those. In fact, that kind of, and by the way, that's Jerome Johnson, who's the executive director of Garfield Farm Museum, and there's a handsome picture of you on my website right now if you go to this week's show. I like that that getup you've got there, that suit. Very nice. Where can I get one of those?
Some of the period clothing we wear for the interpretation of the 1840s setting of the site.
Do you have that custom made?
Yes.
We'll talk after the show. I need me an outfit like that. I don't know why.
Just... All right, well, we'll get you out interpreting at the farm.
Well, you know, maybe I'll come up.
You want the uniform, you got to do the work.
Well, that's okay. Right. All right, I can do both. We're also talking to Kathy McGlynn, and let's go to that, Kathy, what I was just saying a second ago, and we were talking about the use of pesticides, because you're involved with the Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership, or NIIPP, IIPP, right?
Yes.
And I imagine you run across this question from time to time, don't you?
I do, but most of the people I'm currently working with are restoration ecologists, and they do need to have herbicides in their packs,
mm-hmm.
part of the equipment that they use for their job. And they work at very large scales.
Yeah, which is different from the average homeowner. You're fairly new to the Midwest, I understand. Is that correct?
I've been here about 6 months.
Oh, that is fairly new. Okay, and you came from the East Coast.
Yes, I'm from the Hudson Valley, New York.
Okay. What in the Hudson Valley and the Midwest, what are we seeing that is comparable? What kind of, you know, are those two regions, can they be compared in terms of invasive species?
They can, but you can also tell that New York tends to get some invaders earlier than we do, so it's a good predictor of what's coming our way.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. For instance?
For instance, mile-a-minute vine is already in New York.
Okay, explain what mile-a-minute vine is for my listeners who have never heard of mile-a-minute vine.
Okay.
And you can kind of guess what it is just by its name.
It's a rapidly growing vine that occurs in edges of forests and in fields, and it's become a problem in Christmas tree plantations.
Why Christmas trees?
It sort of wraps itself around the base of the trees and also causes crowding within the fields.
Wow. I had no idea.
And because New York's regulations are a bit different from Illinois, they're much more strict about the use of herbicide.
Mm-hmm.
One of the current procedures for dealing with myeluminate vine there is having grazing sheep handle it.
Really?
Yes.
That's sort of non-toxic, isn't it?
Yes.
And so the difference, say, between kudzu and myeluminate vine, I mean, obviously they're different plants, but in terms of the effects, are we kind of dealing with the same thing?
Actually, it's myeluminate vine has been called the kudzu of the north.
Ah, well, listen, the kudzu of the south will soon be the kudzu of the north if the temperatures continue to rise. It is already making its way northward. I have heard, somebody told me that it managed to overwinter in one of the suburbs of Chicago, which really wouldn't surprise me very much.
It's in Evanston.
Oh, is that where it was? Evanston. So you know about this?
Yes.
Okay, tell me about what the problem in Evanston with kudzu.
Well, it's been treated with herbicide, and they've noted that originally they thought it wouldn't survive the winter, but it's been there several years, so it is capable of overwintering in this area.
Not good. That's not good. That can't be good. So tell me exactly what, because there's another program you're involved with, which is the New Invaders Watch Program. How is that connected to the Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership?
Well, one of our missions is to prevent plant invasions, and the New Invaders Watch Program is a list of 21 species of plants that are infrequently found in this area, but will be coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
So our plan is to train people who are on the ground and in the field to recognize these plants and be able to report them quickly so we know how to respond. We can respond more quickly if we're given the information rapidly, and we can create distribution maps and give people warnings. We have a lot of natural areas managers who are partners.
And are these are things that are likely to occur in natural areas, probably not in a suburban setting?
Some of them also occur in suburban settings, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But again, most of the partners we have right now are working in the natural areas. And we also work with transportation folk who are on the front lines of many of the invasions, because a lot of the plants are distributed along roadways via car tires and trucks and various other vehicles. And
That's one of the chief ways that plants move along, isn't it?
Yes.
Although, you know, there are circumstances, and you and I chatted about this the other day, and Jerome, feel free to jump in, that there are some plants that are more and more being considered invasive that are still sold in various places. Usually nurseries are better at handling this than, say, the box stores, because, let's talk about burning bush, mm-hmm. for one thing. It is... Where is that considered invasive, Kathy?
It is considered invasive to the Chicago region, and it is on the list of the Chicago Botanic Garden as an invasive plant.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if that plant is on this list, it indicates that it has demonstrated its ability to escape from gardens and become a potential threat to natural areas. And based on information we have from the Northeast, where it already is in natural areas, it can be can have quite a few ecological impacts.
So why is it I can walk into a box store and purchase this?
Well, there are two things going on. One is that the public still likes it because it's very beautiful.
Yeah, and it turns red in the fall, and that's, you know, we want our red plant. And basically, it's very low maintenance. You slam one of those babies in the ground, and then you walk away. It kind of takes care of itself.
Yeah, and as long as there is demand for it, it will be stocked. So it's a matter of educating the public and making more informed choices about what they put in their garden.
Well, is it a bad idea to legislate it out of existence?
Well, we have some legal measures, but nothing of that sort. We have the Chicago Ordinance, which is more of a list of plants that we know will be problems, and we're trying to prevent them from even making it into the region.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not familiar with the legislation regarding plants that are already here and have an established market.
Well, but, okay, let's take purple loosestrife. That was sold for a long time, mm-hmm. in places, and now pretty much it's And I can remember a time when the nursery sold what they called sterile purple loose strife, and then some mm-hmm. people would say, "Well, how do you know it's sterile? And how, can you prove this?" And I don't even see that anymore. And it seems to me that is a plant that got taken out of the stores. Why can't the same thing happen for burning bush?
I suspect it can, but mm-hmm. again, it's a matter of getting the public to be on board with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think largely it's a question of educating the consumer. We've seen progress in a lot of arenas because, consumers, number one, I think beginning in the 70s, began to question the quality of items and products, and they became more knowledgeable about them and such. And this has been spreading into all arenas, whether it's working with plants that are native to a region, working with heirloom varieties of vegetables and crops and such. So you're seeing this kind of awareness that's greatly increased. So if you look backwards, it's sort of hard to believe we've gotten this far in 30 years. Unfortunately, our knowledge and our awareness has also made us aware of the fact, because the world is getting smaller, because of the rapidity of transportation around the globe, we're seeing plants and animals and pathogens and insects coming in from other parts of the world that can gain a pretty quick foothold here. And the challenge is not so much the whole environment as is just simply the fact that if there are specific islands, if you will, whether it's a patch of woods that has a very rare couple of type of plants in it, or like Lake Michigan that is, really an unusual body, the Great Lakes are, all that fresh water, there's not many of those around the world. These, in effect, are like islands, and if you have an invasive species move into these, they can have a great impact and maybe cause extinction. So that's where you have to get involved sometimes in some pretty heavy-duty methods of management just to save some of these rare species and ecosystems that you can't necessarily apply across the board to large-scale areas, thousands and thousands and thousands of acres, but to at least try to preserve some of these, and so you have them, that if in the future you can reintroduce them in areas or whatever where they once were, then that's a possibility. So it is a conservation rescue kind of effort, because ultimately we can't manage the millions of acres of natural areas and such in our national forests and all to the full extent that they might be to try to keep them, quote, pristine. There are still steps we can do, though, to try to limit the impact as things change.
That's Jerome Johnson, and he is the executive director of Garfield Farm Museum, where they're having their 25th annual Prairie Woodlands and Wetlands Management Seminar next Saturday, February 19th. That's from 8:30 to 4:30. And by the way, it's only $50 for the whole day. And it's a beautiful place to go. That's the other thing. It's really nice going out to your neck of the woods, rolling land, and just a lovely setting. We're also talking to Kathy McGlynn, who is with the Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership. Both of you, we have a call, and I think it's a very good one from Bernie. Bernie, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Yeah, I just want to more of this keep government off your back talk, I just wanted to ask one question. Where can you take a plant and ask what it is and whatever? Because I got, when you were talking about that Cujo or what is it?
Kudzu.
Kudzu, and this friend of mine, he was describing this thing that wrapped around his tree in Chicago, and I was just wondering where you could take this to see what it is.
That's a really good question. There are various places you can take plants to be ID'd. First of all, you can go to the Chicago Botanic Garden. You can go to the Morton Arboretum. They'll do plant ID for you. You can go to your local extension office, Illinois Extension, from the University of Illinois. Kathy or Jerome, do you want to? Where else might Bernie get some help with this?
Well,
if
there's
you have digital
also
photos,
a lot of web.
Hold on. Let's start with Kathy. Go ahead, Kathy.
Okay, sorry. If you have digital photos, you could send them to me at our website, or you can send them to the newinvaders.org website, and we can send out the photos to a botanist who can check them out.
Can you put that on your website or whatever, that we can pull that up? I can't write all this down.
Oh, no, it's up there already.
And also, too, I was just joking about government off your back. This is just an example of there's so many changes going on this earth, and who else? Private business won't straighten it out and sell.
Well, no, because private business wants to. Well, business needs to make money, and
right.
You know, and that's why I was asking. You know, and you've got a real good point there, Bernie, which is, you know, how far do we want to get government involved in this? The problem is if businesses continue to sell plants, they're going to wreak havoc with our environment. What is our recourse? What do we do? Do we just, especially if, and there's a lot of people out there that don't know the difference between one plant and another. It makes no difference to them. It looks pretty. Let's put this in. And they don't realize that a burning bush or maybe a barberry, there's certain barberries that are invasive, and those are still sold. You can see rows and rows of them when you go into certain box stores. And I'm aware of it. Kathy's aware of it. Jerome is aware of it. How do we stop this? Especially if they're going, then what happens is people like Jerome and Kathy have to go out there and rip them out because they establish themselves in natural areas. So, you know, that's, I guess that's the question, but you're right. It's maybe we don't want to get government involved. Maybe we have to. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I believe myself the whole world should be together on changes. I mean, every country has to be looking at the oceans and everything. I mean, in private business, what they're doing. This is my feeling.
Yeah, well, as Jerome pointed out, the world is changing. We are becoming closer and closer, more tightly knit. And it's impossible to stop these things from showing up on our shores in a global economy. But let me tell you that, Bernie, that on my website, go to MikeNovak.net and go to this week's show, and there's a headline that says Garfield Farm presents a 25th anniversary native plant seminar. And if you just scroll down a couple of paragraphs, it says New Invaders Watch Program. If you click on that, you can find the information to send Kathy a photo of this plant and get it ID'd. You know, and it's possible it's something like English ivy. It's possible that it's a euonymus, colorata. Those are plants that they can wrap around trees and become a nuisance, can't they, Kathy?
Yes.
So that's what I would have you do, Bernie. And if you have any problems with that, just write to me, mike@mikenovak.net, and I'd be happy to send you the link if you still can't find it.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Kathy and Jerome, thank you so much. Have fun next week. Teach people, tell them not to go out and buy burning bush. And what else would you, on a short list of plants that you think people might not be aware of that have potential danger, what would you add to that, either of you?
Well, I think one that just amazes me, and some of you'll see people who just go to great lengths to get rid of the dandelion from their yard, and yet they have an incredible hedge all around their property of buckthorn. Some communities have come by it honestly, where there was actual landscaping, where it was back at the turn of the century, buckthorn was being used. But generally speaking, it's amazing to see that people don't worry about that dandelion, and here's a row of buckthorn all around their property that's choking out oaks and any wildflowers and things like that. So that always amazes me. That's one of the big ones.
It is. You got one, Kathy?
I would say the bittersweets. We're having problems with Asian bittersweet, but it's very difficult to distinguish from the native bittersweet, and often it's misidentified.
And that's a vine also. That's a vine too, right?
Yes.
You know what? This is very interesting. I just got tweeted, the comment is, dare I say, labels on invasive species? People seem so opposed to labeling things, though. That would be one thing. But you know, a plant that or a company that's or a business that's selling an invasive plant is not going to have that. You know, how do you label? It's not going to happen. So.
Well, and I think the big thing too is just education in general. It's not so much telling people what they can't do or shouldn't do or whatever. It's more about what are the advantages and what are the positive things. With so many things, because that's really going to get people to respond. We can't expect government to be able to do everything because, A, we just don't have the money to be able to pay for that.
Well, we don't have the money for anything right now. And you know, we're broke.
Right.
The country's broken, so that's probably not going to happen. I mean,
right.
We can't even get high-speed rail, maybe. Who knows? All right. Well, listen, all the information is on my website, and thank you both for being here. And I have to get out there, and we'll talk about 19th century clothing.
All right.
Jerome. I want one of those suits.
Wonderful.
What's the matter, Heather?
I just don't understand your desire to have a full wool, like, four-piece suit.
It's snappy.
It is snappy. That I'll give you. You got me there.
It's snappy. What can I tell you? I mean, you show up at a party dressed like that, and, you know, you are the bee's knees. Okay. All right, Jerome and Kathy, take care. Have a great day.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Would that compare to your 70s platform heels that you told me about?
Yeah.
Were you snappy in those when you showed up at a party?
Well, yeah, I know.
Fashion trends of the decade.
I wish I had those shoes still around.
I do, too. I should turn them into a lamp or something.
I wore them about four times. I mean, total.
I can just see you with, like, your Huggy Bear walk, kind of.
I don't have a center of gravity, so there's...
I can imagine it was complicated by those shoes even more.
It was. It was absolutely complicated. So are we going to get some...
We got some good tips.
All right. We'll take a look at those in a second. Meanwhile, speaking of tips, here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Are you aware that winter is an excellent time to prune your trees? One of the reasons is that winter pruning can slow the spread of diseases such as Dutch elm disease and oak wilt, and even an infestation of emerald ash borer. Why? Because the tree is dormant and less likely to produce running sap that attracts disease-carrying insects. In addition, pruning can also help reduce snow and ice damage to trees that are prone to this kind of damage. Birches, for instance, can be devastated by snow and ice if not pruned on a regular basis to help improve their structure. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
As we move into 2011, you know that there are some green service providers that will once again step up and do special work. One of them is WRD Environmental. You've heard me talk about their involvement in green activities like Greentown, the future of community, at the College of Lake County in Grays Lake, Illinois. That was last March. I wonder if we're coming up on that again. WRD also sponsored the 6th annual Chicago River Summit last June, hosted by Friends of the Chicago River and the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Speaking of the river, WRD Environmental has been instrumental in developing and maintaining the award-winning and innovative Fish Hotel in the Chicago River for 2 years. And that's not all. WRD Environmental was part of the South Pond Rehabilitation Team. And that ought to be interesting this spring as all those plants come back to life, that part of Lincoln Park that was renovated. And WRD was one of the main sponsors for Mayor Daley's Landscape Award Ceremony, which celebrates gardening all over the city. You can be sure that WRD is going to be a driving force behind those kinds of initiatives this year, too. For experienced, sustainable landscape development, trust the professionals at WRD Environmental on the web at WRDEnvironmental.com. I'm not sure how this fits into Valentine's Day, but...
Well, it could be the frenzied boyfriends and girlfriends of America running around to try to get something romantic done now.
Yes. those poor deluded people.
I still say stupid and cupid rhyme, and that's no accident.
It's not at all an accident. I'll tell you what, if you have a tip on preservation. So what have we come across here?
Well, my favorite thus far has been tweeted.
And I'm sorry, and I should say for flower preserving flowers.
Since everyone's going to be getting flowers, like the florists are all jumping for joy today because it's flower giving holiday.
I think this is their biggest day of the year.
Next to Mother's Day?
I wonder which one has more,
Mother's Day or Valentine's Day?
That's a really good question.
Mm-hmm.
I know this is a big one, and I remember several years back, there was a snowstorm, right around Valentine's Day, I think the weekend of, and it just killed the industry. They're so subject to those kinds of things, you know, if you get snowed out, you don't get a second crack at Valentine's Day.
No.
And especially since it's in
February.
Then what
do you do with all those stocked flowers then, too?
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
Yeah.
But my favorite thus far, though, is from My Skinny Garden. Her tip is that gardeners would probably rather a plant, a shrub, or a tree for Valentine's Day instead of flowers, something that they can keep year-round and plant and cultivate. So there's a tip. But other ones, what is it with aspirin in the water? That's been grind up a tab of aspirin and put it in the water?
You know what? I'm clueless.
Yeah. And it's in the, so what's up with some aspirin? Take an aspirin and crush it with the back of a spoon or into a fine powder. Place this in the vase, mixing it with water. Only after that, put the flowers in the vase. Every time you change your water, add a crushed aspirin in the water mix. In the water, mix it well. You'll see the flowers last much longer this way.
And they will have fewer headaches.
Yes, and no aches and pains or joint problems.
And fewer heart attacks.
Yeah, the 81 milligram.
Yeah.
Another tip, cutting the stems underwater and then adding ginger ale or Sprite to the water for the sugar.
Now that's interesting because that is something, I wonder if that's a myth.
It says, well, the combo of acid and sugar keeps the bacteria away and feeds them at the same time, but not to use diet soda because you need the actual sugar.
Because we've talked about that in regard to Christmas trees.
Yes.
And how the soda in the water does not really work. It's just use water for that. What I like about that tip is cutting the stems underwater.
Yes, and,
now, I'm lazy. I usually don't do that, but the idea is you don't want to expose them to air at all.
Do you straight cut or angle cut?
I would assume you angle cut.
Okay.
But again, I'm not a florist.
Could depend on the flower.
Yeah.
So, but I'm getting sharp angle before you put them in the fresh water. Make sure you change the water every other day. If you're blessed with a room that has plenty of direct sunlight, make sure your flowers don't get it. Direct sun will make the flowers wilt much sooner. That was the last one. It says, if you're blessed with a room that has plenty of direct sunlight, make sure your flowers don't get
it. Right, right.
Direct sun will make the flowers wilt much sooner.
That's a lot of tropicals can't handle direct sunlight. True. This is interesting. I got an email. It's not about
Not about flowers.
Mm-hmm. It's a wrong plant story. From Arlene, who writes, Mike, years ago, my mother-in-law saw a beautiful vine growing on the roadside. It was fall, and it was a beautiful red color. Those of you who are listening to this and know what this plant is are probably already starting to figure this one out. She had her husband dig up some so she could put it on her fence. Years later, she had her son, eventually my husband, remove the vine because she wanted the fence painted. Well, to make a long story short, she had been growing poison ivy on her fence. I won't even tell you how bad a poison ivy outbreak my husband got. Nice. Thanks.
Ouch.
Thanks, mom-in-law.
Ouch.
Well, that's one of the things about the poison ivy vines. They just have this beautiful red color.
Zamboni explains the soda pop in the water. She says the lowering of the pH of the water can extend the life of the blooms. That's what the acid and soda pop thing is all about.
Cool. There we go.
Makes sense.
So why doesn't it work for Christmas trees? That's what I want to know.
Well, a tree is a different kind of plant than a flower, for starters.
I know. And we're talking about a bloom here.
Yeah,
so.
This is just for, you know, you're going to get, this is a way, because, you know, the I'm sorry. I know so many guys who rush off to the grocery store and buy the flowers last minute. You know, they're like, oh, here, you know, happy Valentine's Day. And, but it's... It works.
Well, what,
first
well,
off,
wait
fellas,
a second,
it works.
Wait a second.
But this is at least how they can keep their grocery store flowers a little fresher. Long.
Right. Well, but what's wrong with that? Even
there
going
is nothing
at the last...
wrong with that. That's the thing. Even I mean, though those aren't the ideal flowers to get, a guy brings me flowers, I'm happy. Period. Done.
Exactly. I'm saying, why is there a problem
it's
if
so
it's the last
easy,
second? You know, I.
And as Mike has stated, girls, don't be afraid to buy your fella flowers too.
Yep.
My boys like them too.
They do.
Yep.
I do.
I manned up my dad's flowers when I bought my father's a very, you know, meat and potatoes kind of fella. He doesn't do flowers. And when he was in the hospital for a surgery, I bought him flowers. But instead of just bringing the bouquet plain, I tied fishing lures all over it because he loves to fish. And so we decorated, like, we put some woody pieces in there and were able to, you know, hook the hook into the wood pieces so they wouldn't snag anybody that walked
nice.
By. I did put a warning label around the vase that said, warning flowers bite. And a little styrofoam pieces on the end of any that stuck out.
You
but,
know, it's
but
sad
it was
when
a
you...
way to decorate it for the manly men.
But it's sad when it's dangerous, when you know... when it's
it was covered for walleye
You have
lures.
To have a hazard warning on your flowers.
So what his, the only thing that a man loves more than his family is fishing. So it was pretty easy.
A man... And his fish.
And his fish.
Okay. Let's take care of some business, and then I want to do a reminder about a couple of things coming up this week. And as we've been mentioning, Valentine's Day is tomorrow, and your friends at Sid's Floral Shops want you to know that there's still time to order flowers for your Valentine. Visit SidsOnline.com or call them at 800-974-SIDS. 800-974-7437. And you can do it right now. And they'll help you select something really special for your Valentine. Now, they have the Super 4, which is Sid's most popular Valentine's gift. And it includes one dozen premium roses arranged in a glass vase, a plush teddy bear, a Valentine's Mylar balloon, and a large 14-ounce box of Fannie Mae chocolates. For something unique, check out the Magic Box or Ruby Surprise arrangements or any of the dozens of fresh floral Valentine's gifts. And of course, you do that online. You just take a look, and then you give them a call. And it will be hand-delivered throughout Chicagoland, or you can let them help you send a long-distance floral gift throughout the U.S. and Canada, plus most international destinations. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills and Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. And here's a save-the-date reminder. SIDS Annual Garden Expo is coming to their Palos Hills store on Friday and Saturday, March 4th and 5th. Visit SIDSOnline.com for all of those details.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
What are you doing next year? And I don't mean in general. I mean from February 25th to March 3rd. I'll tell you what I'll be doing. I'll be on the Norwegian Cruise Line's Norwegian Sun to visit the Caribbean destinations of Nassau, St. Thomas, San Juan, Great Stirrup Cay, and more. And I want you to come with me. We'll be exploring spectacular Zone 11 gardens. Don't forget, we're in Chicago. We're Zone 5. We're going to Zone 11. And some of the most iconic tropical islands on the Northern Hemisphere. We'll be visiting gardens where orchids, bromeliads, and coconut palms are as common as dandelions are in the Midwest, and you'll have your chance to see them up close and personal. That's the coconut palms, not the dandelions. I will be your genial host for this excursion, and I'll share my insights about Midwest gardening along the way. Believe me, we're going to have a great time, and I hope you'll be on board. Now, there are a couple of ways you can get more information. First, you can go to my website, mikenovak.net, and click on the boat that's on the homepage. We've got a I don't know if it's the swimming pool on the boat, I think. Whatever. It's there. The link is there. Or you can call CruiseWorks at 800-876-6664, 800-876-6664. Log on also at cruise-works.com, or you can just write to me, mike@mikenovak.net, and I'll send you all the information you need. I'm planning on getting a tan next February, and I think you need to get one, too. What do we got here?
We got line one, Miss Kathleen, our webmaster extraordinaire, with some really great information on keeping cut flowers.
Hey, webmaster extraordinaire.
Hi. I was just going to give you guys this website, but Heather couldn't make it come up, so I'm just going to tell you.
Well, I'm going to see if I can make it come up on
my... I got it now.
Okay.
Of course, now.
Yeah, now.
Well, I'll summarize for you, okay?
All right.
Use a clean vase. That is, wash it with hot soapy water before you put it in there so that...
Oh, I thought you were going to give me the website. Or is it too hard to...
It's www.mastergardeners.org/pics/extendlife.html.
All right, put that. All right, and now go ahead, Kathleen. Give us the advice.
Okay, use a clean vase.
Mm-hmm.
Cut the stems underwater. Don't bother with crushing or burning them. That's not going to do anything. If you live in a hard water area, which we do, then if you want them to last their longest, you use demineralized waters, which you can get in a supermarket.
Hmm.
Because the hard water doesn't go up into the stems as well, apparently.
Uh-huh.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Do not use softened water because it contains sodium, which is bad for cut flowers. Okay?
Okay.
And, yes, use any of the common lemon-lime sodas, one part of that to three parts of water. Don't use diet drinks or colas. Diet drinks have no sugar. And the colas contain too much acid for flowers.
Uh-huh.
So lemon-lime soda only. Okay.
Yes. And you can add a quarter of a teaspoon of household bleach to keep the solution clear.
Cool.
You put... if
bleach. That doesn't sound good, but go
doesn't,
ahead.
It's master gardeners are saying this, not, you know...
I know. No, I understand.
What I mean is maybe it isn't good, but...
If it's diluted enough, it's for to withhold the bacteria, I'm sure.
Yes. Don't use aspirin or vinegar, which are two ways people say.
Well, see, we said that earlier, and I questioned that.
Right.
And they say the commercial flower preservatives that are sold in florist shops, which are relatively inexpensive, are convenient, and they'll work, too, if you don't want to use lemon, lime, soda, and so on and so forth.
Great. Hey, listen, I've got to get this one last thing out. Kathleen, thank you for the tip.
All right.
Do we want to put it up on the homepage?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Well, bye. And I want to remind you that Alderman Joe Moore from the 49th Ward is holding his Clean Power Ordinance People's Hearing tomorrow, starting about 9:30 at City Hall. If you're interested in the Clean Power Ordinance, and it got delayed by the council, and he said, okay, I've had enough, and let's get this done. It will be at City Hall Council Chambers, second floor, 121 North LaSalle Street in Chicago. There's going to be a press conference at 9:30, and then the hearing starts at 10. I'm sure that a lot of people, the people who support Clean Power Ordinance, if you can be there, that would be great. And then also his benefit, Greening Together benefit to reelect Joe Moore is this Wednesday at Uncommon Ground Restaurant, 1401 West Devon Avenue in Chicago. That got delayed by the big blizzard, and so that's been rescheduled. I'm going to be there because I like the way he stands up for environmental issues in the city of Chicago, and we need somebody who's not just a rubber stamp for the mayor. So, again, the Clean Power Ordinance, people's hearing, and we say people because it's not an official hearing. But the alderman will be there and a bunch of other folks. You can go to my website to get more information on that. All right. We got a three-point landing here. We got all this done?
Yes, we did.
All right. So
Happy Valentine's Day to you, Michael.
Where's my flowers?
Happy Valentine's Day to you,
There's
Michael.
There's still time to go out and get them, you know.
I'll run to the Jewel.
Yeah, run to the Jewel right now. That's it. Don't get them
I'm going to give you that and a bushel of apples.
If they've been sitting next to the apples. Right. All right. And all we say at this point is go green.
Or go home.
We'll see you next week.